This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Senior Planning Advisor at Goldstone Financial Group is Max Rinn. Max, welcome back to the show. I trust you're doing well today.
Doing great. Thanks for having me, John.
I've got a bunch of numbers and stats in front of me. What's most important to you right now, maybe this month? What's key?
Well, all eyes, I'd say, right now are on the CPI report that's coming out on Thursday. I think that's going to be the big day this month that everyone's going to be looking at.
And what are we rooting for there?
Well, we are rooting for it to go down, right? We wanted to get closer to that 2% goal that the Fed's targeting. We're a little off right now. It's closer to 4, so we got some ways to go.
3.7. It has been trending down, though, right?
That's right.
It was as high as, was it 9% over a year ago?
Almost, that's right. Yeah, it was pretty high. We've come down a ways, but still a little bit to go.
Is there something important about 2% other than that's the Fed's target? I mean, does something magical happen at 2% that doesn't happen at 3.7?
Nothing really magical, John, but historically, that's typically what the inflation rate has been year over year, so we're just trying to get more to the normal.
Right, I get that. Well, then there is at least a little science, because it has always struck me as somewhat arbitrary. That is, if there's a fire we have to put out and interest rates have to stay high because we're at 3.7, I've often thought, what if they said 3.5 was our target? Would we notice such a difference in our lives if we had 2% inflation versus 3.5? But since we're not at 2, we're going to keep beating this interest horse. And, you know, you wonder how long we need to do that. How much pain do we need to take? Not that we have a recession technically right now anyway, but you get my point, right? What's so special about 2 that 3.7 does not accomplish?
Well, 2, it's really, I'd say it's more handcuffs on our society. So think, when people are going out getting mortgages, they're trying to go get loans for their businesses, 2%, it's a lot more attractive than 3.5%. And so really, that's all what we're looking at is we're just trying to slow down that money and being exchanged between hands, right?
I see in your notes interest rates on mortgages, car loans, credit cards, and other types of loans will likely increase as the federal interest rates rise. So, but that's the other side of that coin, isn't it? In order to get inflation down, we're going to pay a price for credit.
Exactly right.
And is that a fair trade? I don't know why I'm arguing so much for the other side, but I guess it's my nature to push back a little bit. But businesses and people that are carrying debt are paying the price on this, to say nothing of homeowners who want to sell.
Right. You know, if we continue to see what we have been, though, the past few years with prices continuing to go up and up and up, I mean, people like you and I, John, we're okay. We're still earning an income, but we have to think about these people who are a little more mature who don't. And they're working with more of a fixed income. And so with higher prices, these are really, really eating that generation. So we just have to be very cognizant of that and how it affects everybody.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. So then what's the wisdom on the Fed now? What's going to happen?
Well, it's a great question. I call that the billion-dollar question. Whoever knows that's going to be a rich man. So I think right now, again, all eyes are on Thursday on that CPI. Consumer Price Index report. If we see it go down, I wouldn't be surprised if the Fed paused raising rates. Now, if we see inflation start kicking back up, well, it's probably more than likely that the Fed's going to raise rates again. Now, that being said, the Fed is saying that they're probably going to more than likely raise rates at least one more time this year.
You wrote, with so many economic factors at play, it's nearly impossible to predict a recession. Does that mean it's possible we won't have one?
It's possible. I mean, we could see one, we could not see one. It's really, you know, up in the air at this point. And that's part of the reason why it's so important that you have a plan and you also have your diversification built into your portfolio. Because really, no one knows which way this is going to go.
It's Max Rinn. He's a senior planning advisor at Goldstone Financial Group, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Max, thanks for your help today.
Thanks, Sean.
Up next, Stephen Cohen. He's the co-founder of the Chicago Media Project, We are CMP, Chicago Media Project. We are CMP.org. Steve, this is John. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear what you guys are going to do. You have two-time Academy Award-winning actor, author, and advocate Gina Davis delivering your keynote address this year, huh?
That is right. We're just so excited that Gina is going to be able to join us as our guest of honor and keynote speaker. And in addition to that, we also have Sarah McLachlan is going to be joining us. She's going to be doing a special acoustic performance at the event as well. So we've got sort of a double whammy of guests coming.
Tell me about this event, and can anybody go? Is it open to the public?
It is. It is. It's our 10-year anniversary. We wanted to do a real Chicago-style celebration for CMP's 10 years of supporting great documentaries. And we decided that what we were going to do is a real blowout for it. So in addition to it being a celebration of CMP's 10 years, we really see it as a celebration of all the films that we have supported and helped to produce over the last 10 years, as well as the filmmakers and all the people that we've been involved with helping us to move documentary into a new landscape. So we're very excited about it. And anybody who loves documentaries and wants to be in a room with Gina Davis and Sarah McLachlan and about a dozen Emmy and Oscar award-winning documentary filmmakers is welcome to join.
We are CMP.org. It's October 28th. It says here that your projects are about social impact documentaries. Tell me about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's right. So we really focus ourselves on documentaries that are both narrative storytelling documentaries, usually about people, real people, but because of the storyline, they also have some social issue that's kind of attached to them. It could be stories about women who have overcome sexual violence or some other kind of abuse, and about people who speak truth to power. And we always look for something that makes the movie more than just a story about a person, but also about an issue as well. And we define that issue, social issues, broadly. It could be stories about issues of our time. It could be stories about the human condition. But that's really sort of the focus of our work.
I'm looking at some of the titles: How to Survive a Pandemic, The Lincoln Project. Is that the same Lincoln Project that is a group of Republicans that are not in support of Donald Trump, that Lincoln Project?
It is indeed. We followed them and some of the founders of it during the 2020 election process and sort of beyond that. And so it's kind of the story of just how they formed, what they did, and also kind of the issues that hit them.
Alan V. Farrow, I think we know what that's about. Mayor Pete, that's Buttigieg. And Punch 9 for Harold Washington. You all did a documentary about him, huh?
It's a great documentary. We really love it. It's really the only documentary that really chronicles that you know, extraordinary moment in time for Chicago when Harold Washington was mayor and how he got there.
16 Shots, I think I know what that's about. What's 16 Shots about?
That's about Laquan McDonald, and it's the story of the murder of Laquan McDonald as told through the eyes of both the people who were involved, as well as the police, and that story of how the investigation unfolded. It's a penetrating story, really extraordinarily done, and it sheds light that many people don't know unless they know the Laquan McDonald story in detail. It really kind of sheds light on both sides of it, as well as the trial.
Won't You Be My Neighbor? A lot of us saw that. And Icarus I saw and was troubled by. What a fascinating story that was.
Yeah, that one had, it was really an amazing story. It started out to be something very different. And then when It was really going to be a story about the doping of athletes in amateur biking, but it turned out that the main character became a whistleblower about what was happening in the Russian Olympics in Sochi, and next thing we know, the story took a right turn, and it was such a powerful story and done so well that it ended up winning the Oscar for Best Documentary that year.
Is there a movie besides the ones we've mentioned that I presume I can still watch all of these online or on some sort of streaming service?
Yes. In fact, if you go to our website, we list all of the movies that we have been involved in, and each one of them, where it's possible to watch them on a streaming channel or otherwise, we have a link so you can get right to it. We love to have people look at our website, see a story or a movie that interests them, and be able to go right to it and watch it.
Sink or Swim looks fascinating to me, which all of them do, I must say. Steve, so if somebody had an idea, like, hey, I want to make a movie about the migrant crisis in Chicago or the pizza wars of Chicago, pick a topic, would you all fund it? Do people petition you for financing for their film projects?
Absolutely. So Chicago Media Project, or CMP as we call it now, is really two different entities. We have a not-for-profit, which is the organization that puts on, for example, we do a film festival in Chicago called Doc 10. We provide grants to filmmakers. We provide mentorship and resources to filmmakers, and we also help to develop new ideas for projects. So that would definitely be something that we do all the time. We love to hear about new projects, especially ones that are Chicago-oriented or about Chicago people. And we work with them to see if there's something that we can build into either a long-form or short-form documentary, or you mentioned Sink or Swim. That's actually going to be a series that's going to be showing on Apple in a few months. So now we're working more and more on doing episodic series. We kind of run the gamut of how nonfiction storytelling can be told.
The event, the 10-year anniversary, is going to be October 28th. Gina Davis will be there, among others, and you can get a ticket to it. What's it going to cost me to go to this shindig?
Well, it depends on how you want to come. We have a range of ticket prices. They're on the website, and we also have a pricing for students and filmmakers and people in the filmmaking community. So it really depends who you are and how you want to participate.
Steve Cohen is the co-founder of Chicago Media Project, CMP, and the website is wearecmp.org. That's great news, Steve.
That's it.
Good luck. Congratulations in advance.
Thank you so much, John.
Dennis Rodkin is the residential real estate reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. ChicagoBusiness.com is one good place to read his stuff. Let me ask you about some things that we didn't plan on talking about. So my family says that on the one hand, Mom and Dad's house that they don't live in anymore has these many comps in the neighborhood, and we think it could sell for that amount of money. My brother looks online, and he says the Zestimate from Zillow is a lot more. I mean, like, how can those things be so far apart?
Well, the Zestimate is mechanized. It's automatically generated. One thing your brother-in-law should do would be check. Zillow has, you have to dig down into the pages, but it will tell you, here's how accurate we think our Zestimates are in this region, in this city. Sometimes I think as far down as zip code. So that's one thing to do. But the other thing, more often in our area, Zillow is lower, in part because they don't know, have you replaced the windows? Did you upgrade the bathroom? That kind of thing. And unless an owner has gone in and typed in, this is true on Redfin as well as on Zillow, unless you've gone in and said, we put in a new bathroom, those kinds of things, it doesn't really reflect that. Zillow is a great tool, but I think hanging just on it is not a great idea. I think who's been looking at the comps, a real estate agent or you guys yourselves?
Us, just clicking around.
Well, I think a real estate agent, one of the things a real estate agent does is get far more specific It's not just these are the other three-bedroom, two-bath houses in this town, but these are the ones with a basement, you know, a Pittsburgh bathroom as opposed to a half bath under the toilet under the stairs on the first floor. These are the ones.
What's a Pittsburgh bathroom?
A toilet in the basement.
Sorry, Pittsburgh, if you're listening. How did that happen?
I think because so many people came home covered in coal dust. I think also, there's plumbing in the basement. We need another toilet. It's easy to put there. But a real estate agent would be far more specific about, I mean, if there's a big gap between what one part of the family thinks and the other part of the family thinks, I would say, and I'm not in the real estate business, I would say call a real estate agent who's going to be able to be far more specific.
Well, the market will ultimately tell anybody what your house
is
worth.
That's
true. But it's also interesting, another number you get, which might be different than the other two, is what the county assessor says it's worth. I mean, you'll get this number and they go, well, or maybe it's the bank estimate, but sometimes those are different numbers as well. Your house gets appraised for tax purposes and you go, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Those generally have very little to do with market value.
And I wonder why that is, and what should it be? Like, because when they generate that, they don't come into your house. They don't see if you've updated a bathroom
right.
or a kitchen. And I don't know that I want them to either.
In fact, I don't think in Cook County, I don't think they even know. Is this right? I think they don't even know how many bathrooms there are. I can't remember.
Interesting. But the amount of scrutiny that a house gets under those circumstances strikes me as minimal. And again, I don't know that I want them to come in. For one thing, it's nice that you can update the kitchen. Don't tell anybody. I guess if you pull permits, maybe it'll come up. But
right.
ultimately, you can hide some improvements and the increased value of your home without paying taxes on it. That's not a hot tip
not
for
that
anybody.
We're advocating
but
doing that.
I think that's happened before. Mortgage
oh,
rates.
Oh, John, your lawyer's on the phone.
Mortgage rates have done what now? Stayed up and gone up.
Stayed above 7%, yeah. And I think this time last year, there were, especially real estate agents were saying, yeah, mortgage rates have gone up, but the big phrase was marry the house, date the rate. The idea being mortgage rates will come back down, you can refinance. Well, now rates have stayed high for so long, I haven't heard an agent say marry the house, date the rate for quite a while, because I think we realize that long period of sub 4%, sub 5% interest rates for most of the 21st century, that's behind us. And we're at 7% for quite a while. And the story I just put out today is that the Fannie Mae Home Purchase Sentiment Index, which is a monitor of do people think it's a good time to sell a house, buy a house, I should say, is at its lowest point. Only 16% of people say it's a good time to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Same was true a year ago. Then it got better, and now it's back to 16%. The difference between a year ago and now is that now, for the first time since Fannie Mae started this index, most people say the worst part of it is interest rates as opposed to prices. For so long, people would say, bad time to buy a house because prices are going up. Now, in September, for the first time in the 13 years of this index, people said, biggest problem is rising interest rates.
Elise Glink talked about some of those numbers earlier this week, but on the flip side, is it a good time to sell a house? And about 69% of the people said yes, 31% said no. I wonder what those 69% think. Is it that they are seeing their home values stay high because of limited inventory?
Could also be people who don't have a mortgage anymore.
Yeah.
The house is paid off
right.
for whatever
right.
reason. Because one of the reasons sellers say it's a bad time to sell is I've got this great 3.5% interest rate. And if I sell, I have to buy another house with a 7% interest rate. My affordability shrinks immediately. And that's one of the reasons we have so little inventory on the
right,
market
right.
is that so many people say, I'm not giving up my 3.5-4% interest rate. So I think some of the people saying it's a good time to sell would be people who don't have a mortgage. Others might be in markets that have appreciated so much that I have so much equity in there that the difference isn't going to hurt me as much. Those would be two categories.
Do you know if the percentage of homes purchased with cash is pretty high right now?
It was. I don't know what it is now. During the boom, it was. And that was in large part, well, there were two reasons. One was you could prevail in a bidding war by saying, I'm all cash. You don't have to wait for my mortgage to come through or anything else. I got the cash today, and you can move tomorrow if you want. And the other one was that so many people had big gains from the stock market and other investments that they were pulling cash out to buy the house for the security of having a fully paid house. I think that has probably shifted in more recent months, but I don't have data.
Do you know much about rents these days? What we talk about sellers and buyers and interest rates. What's happening on the rental scene right now?
You know, I don't really cover it, John. I don't know much. I do know that there has been so much rental inventory built in the past several years, in part because it was easier to finance rental construction than for sale construction, that the rental options downtown tend to sort of pull people out of the purchase market. But I can't tell you where rents are going. It's just not part of my beat.
Do you have an opinion about where to house the migrants?
I do not.
I just thought I'd go down the path of things that are only tangentially related to what you know about and then try and put you on the spot there.
I wish somebody's got to have a solution. I don't know what it is.
If anybody's got a massive warehouse and a way to keep it warm economically, give us a call. First, let's get you more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new analysis of migration patterns shows a loss of Illinois residents has been largely offset by incoming immigrants. The figures from the U.S. Census Bureau and Illinois Department of Revenue show the state is becoming less rural, more educated, more foreign-born, and higher paid. More arrivals are also working, with about 200,000 additional workers paying income taxes. Hispanics make up the largest group of new arrivals in Illinois at 50,000. Nearly an equal number are Asian or Pacific Islanders. 63,000 of the new arrivals were young adults, ages 18 to 24. The owner of Old Orchard Mall in Skokie has inked new agreements to fill the space left empty when Lord & Taylor closed 5 years ago. Cranes reports home furnishings company Arhaus and fashion brand Zara will open or expand locations at Old Orchard next year. Arhaus will fill 24,000 square feet and Zara will expand by about 20,000 square feet. The mall's owners also have plans to demolish a vacant Bloomingdale store and build a 300-unit apartment complex. The plan also calls for development of a public park and medical space. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, thank you. And we're going to talk about what some people think is the perfect food after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, the perfect food?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Hey, pizza.
Yeah, where else can you get all of the basic food groups in one serving? And while we Chicagoans tend to be a little snobbish about our pies because there are so many great and iconic purveyors here, the number one pizza seller in Illinois?
Those of us in downstate Illinois, we do love Casey's Pizza.
Yes, more than 500 locations in the land of Lincoln compared to just over 200 for number two Domino's.
For folks that don't have a pizza place, you know, near, especially in rural Illinois, Casey's is everywhere.
And that's Lindsay Mitchell, Director of Marketing for Illinois Corn, which is part of a group called Illinois Farm Families that is helping Casey's deliver pizza to farmers who are busy with corn and soybean harvest.
Yesterday, in five places in Illinois, we had 96 pizzas available to give away.
Free pizza, gotta love it. It's going to continue all month. And why are you giving away 96 at a time, Lindsay?
Because 96% of farms in Illinois are family-owned, and that's the campaign that we're celebrating. We are the 96%. So we're feeding some farm families and they can like take a full pizza back and some drinks to the farm family that is hard at work harvesting and hauling grain.
And on each pizza box Casey's is delivering is a photo of one of the Illinois farm families.
During the month of October, they're going to get to see a local farm family on their pizza box at Casey's. So we're very excited about that opportunity.
And
if you'd like to learn more about the family farmers that are growing your food, you should check out wearethe96.org. We have several family farmers featured there for you to learn about, and even you can send them a message there. So that's a cool opportunity.
That website again?
wearethe96.org.
Thank you, Lindsay Mitchell of Illinois Corn. From the farm to your belly, along with National Pizza Month.
Pizza, pizza.
Today's National Angel Food Cake Day. And more cake, it's National Cake Decorating Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
We're talking to Dennis Rodkin here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Dennis is the residential real estate reporter at Trains, at Cranes, Chicago Business. Let's just do in short order the Winnetka Park District and the Justin, is it Ishbia? Ishbia House. Where is that story now?
Well, so the latest is, well, let's go back for just a second. Justin Ishbia bought 3 lakefront parcels in Winnetka.
He's a billionaire.
Next to his 3 is a park. Then he bought the next property. Then there's a park. So 3 Ishbias, park, Ishbia, park. At the time that he bought several of these in 2020, arranged a land swap with the Winnetka Park District, so it would be all Ishbia, then all park.
Well, the Park District gets a bigger beachfront then.
Park District gets, and that's part of their 2050 improvement plan vision, is to create a nice big beach with those big sort of crab claw revetments that soften the waves and make more of a swimming beach and various other things. They can combine these 2 parks into one, have a nice big beach. So this was arranged in 2020 and became more known publicly in 2022 when there were some issues with getting some of the construction approved. So since then, there was a lawsuit filed in 2022 by some residents saying that the Park District doesn't have the authority to make this exchange with the Ishbias for 2 reasons. One, you're violating the public trust. You have an asset that the public uses and you can't trade it away. And you also can't trade it for less, for something that's worth less than what you're giving. You can't trade something that's worth $1 for something that's worth 75 cents.
Are they necessarily doing that?
Well, so that was the question in a lawsuit that was just dismissed last week. These residents, so there were appraisals made in 2020 by the Park District saying we're actually getting something that's worth more. And then in 2022, real estate market had changed and these people were filing a lawsuit, who were filing a lawsuit, got their own appraisals done, and they said it's actually the opposite. The Park District would be losing money. So you're violating the law if you make this trade. What the judge said last week is, well, no, actually, because what you're doing is you're arguing with the appraisal. You're not saying that they just willy-nilly picked a dollar figure out of the blue, but you're arguing with an appraisal. And anybody can argue with an appraisal,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the Park District, didn't go through the appropriate motions to get it appraised, so you can't really get them on this. The lawsuit was dismissed. One piece of it will very likely come back. They also had to prove that, or the judge said that they hadn't proved that the Park District had not really thought through this swap. And what the attorneys said in their the attorneys for the losing side said in their statement is, well, we can prove that the Park District didn't think it through. So they're going to come back with that, which is to say it's not yet a wide open channel for that land swap to be made. But the judge did say, as far as I know, as of now, yeah, go ahead and do that land swap. But again, the lawyers are going to come back and try to prove that Winnetka Park District officials didn't think it through deeply enough and therefore would be violating the public trust. This thing has gone on. What did I say before the break? I've covered this 10 times a year for 3 years. This is amazing because, you know, the Ishbia is building about a $74 million estate and assembled several parcels. Winnetka is certainly not Winnetka has resources and they want to develop this park. And everybody says the end result, everybody on both sides says the end result should be beautiful park and let this guy build an estate. But there are so many wheels turning with people who want to stick it to him, want to stick it to the Park District. This is going to go on for a while.
Hey, Winnetka, is this what y'all want to do? Does this sound like a good time? Is this good use of your resources?
Well, in their defense, John, I mean, they really do. Some of these people really do believe. I'm a reporter. I'm not taking sides. Some of these people really do believe that they are defending the public trust.
Yeah, right.
Of that beach.
Trust. What does that even mean? I mean, like the legal document or the faith that people have in maintaining a public piece of property and access to Lake Michigan. Well, if you double the size of the beach and this guy gets a fabulous showcase house next to it, I just don't see who's harmed there.
Well, first of all, Illinois does actually have a public trust doctrine. There is actually a legal public trust doctrine.
Yeah.
And they're sort of trying to determine whether it fits into that or does not. Yeah, and one side would say it does, and one side would say it doesn't. But, you know, there are so many other issues here, like the tearing down of trees on his site, and what kind of access. If you live on the North Shore, you're used to going to public beaches and often being able just to walk onto the supposedly private beaches of private residences because they are actually publicly owned. And then the question, the early questions with his property had to do with, are you blocking public access by building these big rock walls?
So you're going to put an electric fence up or something like that?
Next to a lake? I don't think you put an electric fence next to water.
These aren't Asian carp, for crying out loud. They're citizens. All right. Well, continue to report on that, my friend. It sounds exhausting. I'm glad you're doing the good work.
It just keeps crossing my screen. It's amazing.
Pray for Dennis. Dennis Rodkin, the residential real estate reporter at Cranes. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, John.